This is a Mexican Crossing Lines.
That's great. It starts with an earthquake, birds and snakes, an airplane. Lenny Bruce is not afraid. I have a hurricane. Listen to yourself. Turn world serves its own needs. Dummy, serve your own needs. Feed it up a knock, speak, grunt, no strength. The ladder starts to clatter with. Reporters babble Trump, Kevin Croft, look at that, no plane, fine, then, uh-oh, overflow, population, common food, but it'll do, save yourself, serve yourself, world, serve its own needs, listen to your heart, please, dummy with the rapture and the reverend and the right, right, you patriotic, patriotic, slam, fight, bright, light, feel it, pretty sight,
it's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world as we know it, it's the end of the world.
Slice and burn, return, listen to yourself churn. Lock it in, uniform and book, burning blood, letting every motive escalate. Automotive incinerate, light a candle, light a motor, step down, watch your heel crush, crush. Uh-oh, this means no fear, cavalier, renegade, steer clear. A tournament of lies. Offer me solutions, offer me alternatives, and I decline.
It's the end of the world as we know it. It's the end of the world.
Hey, everybody. Hello and welcome. This is Cindy Gomez-Shump.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shump.
You're listening to 88.1 FM KPPPLP Fargo-Moorhead, where we are adding local color to your airwaves. We are broadcasting online. You can find us on your radio dial at 88.1 FM here in the Fargo-Moorhead region. But you can also listen online. Just go to kpppfm.com and listen live right there. Tonight, we're going to be talking about political unrest from St. Paul to the DNC in Philly. And there has been a lot of protesting going on around the country, specifically in the last couple of nights. We've seen incredible activity in protesting, the walkout at the DNC.
Oh, yeah.
The Bernie supporters that walked out.
Yep.
Massive amounts of protesters there. I don't think that the people in Philly expected it to go on.
And there's been no news coverage of any of this, so...
Right. I mean, we were looking at social media and seeing that there was just thousands and thousands of people. And unlike a lot of the places where you see a lot of political unrest, we weren't seeing the riot gear. We weren't seeing a lot of bike cops out there. The protests here in St. Paul, Minnesota, were quite different. Overnight, there were 70 arrests of peaceful protesters that were out there. There was a number of people that were booked into jail and several that were cited and released. According to the police reports that were coming out on Facebook, a total of about 70 people were arrested in front of the governor's mansion.
Wow.
And the police said that they were arrested for disturbing the peace.
Really?
And yes, and blocking traffic. Okay. And disorderly conduct.
Wow.
So I interviewed two folks. One is Janessa Marquette, and she's an activist and lives in St. Paul. She's a Latina, and she is a social work intern at Neighborhood House in St. Paul. So we're going to listen to that interview right from one of the eyewitnesses, activists that was out there protesting about what happened and what went on with the arrests. As also, we're going to be hearing from Officer Mike, who is information officer with the St. Paul Police Department, about why they arrested people and what kind of information they want protesters to have in the aftermath of all of the protests that have been going on since Philando Castile was killed in Minneapolis. And we will also be talking, then we're going to go to a quick musical break after hear those two interviews. And then when we come back, we're going to be talking about that walkout at the DNC. We will also be talking about Michelle Obama's speech and her reference to slaves building the White House, which has upset a lot of people. And miracle of miracles, Black Lives Matter finally showed up at the DNC.
Exactly.
So we will be talking about the mothers of the movement, all of that when we come back right after this break. This is Cindy Gomez Shemp calling you from KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead Radio.
Yes.
First of all, I wanted to ask you about the protest that you attended.
Sure.
So first of all, can you give us your full name?
Yeah, it's Janessa Marquette.
And you're a social worker working at the Neighborhood House in St. Paul, is that correct?
I'm a social work intern.
Excuse me. Thank you for clarifying. Social work intern. And what was your interest in being at this protest? This protest was for Philando Castile. Can you give us a little background about how you got involved?
Well, I mean, my background is in, I have a bachelor's in sociology, criminal justice and women and gender studies. And I myself am Chicana, and so I am a minority. And I think I've just always kind of had an interest in social justice movements and in advocating for them. And I've only done living in the cities for a year. And since I've been here, you know, these things are consistently happening in my community, like in my neighborhood, where Philando Castile was shot. That was only a couple miles away from where I attend school. You know, I work with youth that, you know, things like this directly affect them. And so it's important to me to be a part of this, to let the community know that, you know, we're not gonna stand for this anymore. Like, this is a real injustice. This is something that's been happening for a very long time. And, you know, like we say, enough is enough.
Now, at this particular protest that you were at for Philando Castile, this has been going on for weeks, ever since he was shot by Officer Jeronimo Yanez. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Have there been daily protests nonstop since that time?
I would say that it's been I have my GPS on. I'm in my car. I wouldn't say that it's been like daily protests. That makes it sound like it just kind of a negative connotation to what we've been doing. And really what it's been is like, yes, we've been at the governor's mansion. We've been out there. We've been doing stuff. You know, on Sunday, we put on an event that was called Stand for Something Sunday. It was open to the community, and it was a very beautiful gathering with hundreds of people from the community. So, I mean, like, yes, we've been there every day, but every day it hasn't been like what happened yesterday.
Okay, tell me how yesterday was different.
Yesterday was different because they came in ready to battle us. They came in ready for, like, a war. You know, I've always said, like, we've been armed with our words. We've been there peacefully. going on in the morning that arrests were happening. At around 11:30, my presence was requested because there are people that were experiencing, like, mental health issues and having, like, a mental health crisis. And they were wanting somebody out there to talk to people and kind of help people through this. And when I got there, the streets were completely blocked off. I was stopped at one point, and then I just walked around the block and was able to get, like, right where the governor's mansion is on the end of that block. And, you know, often we were out there, and then the next thing we know, we have state troopers, we have officers coming at us with batons. They're, you know, in, like, basic riot gear. And we were doing nothing. We were sitting peacefully. We were standing. We were chanting. And they came at us as if we were violent, as if we were already violent. And really, like, they were inciting fear. They were intimidation tactics, forcefully arresting people. Multiple people that were arrested were treated for concussions, dislocated shoulders. People are bruised. You know, there was, I mean, potentially, like, broken wrists, broken arms. You know, they treated us as if we were these violent protesters who just, you know, like, we needed to be dealt with immediately. And that's not what we were doing at all. I mean, we were there peacefully, and we've been asking, you know, we've had these concrete, you know, things that we've put out that we've said, like, these are our demands. We have these concrete demands. This is the justice that we want. And we've always consistently been told, like, it's okay for us to be out there. If they come to us and they ask us to change things, like, we've done it. We've complied. But today it was kind of like they just had enough of us being there, and they wanted to shut it down. And they did that through violence and intimidation of fear.
Now, I've been following the progression of the statements being put out by the police department, by the mayor, and by protesters, and everything seemed to be going in a peaceful direction from what I could see. The mayor had stated that protesters would be allowed to peaceably assemble and make their case, and the police chief stated he did not want to make arrests, that people, as long as they were not being disruptive and they were being peaceful, and not blocking traffic, that they would be allowed to assemble and protest. What do you think happened? What caused all of these sudden arrests? There was about 70 arrests. I saw that the police department stated, St. Paul Police Department stated there was 70 arrests, and that they were for disorderly conduct, unlawful assembly, and public nuisance. What happened? How did it get this bad?
You know, when we look at an incident like this, where we just say, okay, how did it get this bad? I think we have to look at the overall picture of what the criminal justice system is. I don't inherently think that police are bad, and some people might take that statement and think, like, whoa, Janessa, like, you know, that's, you know, just because I stand with Black Lives Matter doesn't mean I'm anti-police. But we also have to recognize that the criminal justice system is something that was built on oppression. It's built on intimidation, it's built on fear, and it's built on power. Mm-hmm. And they take that power, and then these officers are told, this is what you have to do. And rather than fighting against something that is oppressive, where some of them even acknowledge that they know that it's oppressive, they don't do anything to fight back against that oppression. They just do what they're told. And that's what we're told over and over again. I'm just doing what I'm told. And so when we were out there and we were in the street, yes, we were breaking a law by being in the street, but the thing is like, we were taken to the streets for a reason, because they came in, they pulled us out, they attempted to arrest us, they told us that we weren't compliant anymore, and the thing was, is we were. And, you know, we were being peaceful, and so when they started arresting the people in the morning, that's when we took to the street. So we initially weren't in the street, and then we took the street, and they let us have it. We were there, the streets were already blocked off. Eventually, people moved back to the governor's mansion. They attempted to disperse those people. We had every right to be on the sidewalks. And then the officers just went in with their orders, and they started pulling people violently, like, away from the governor's mansion, away from the front, and arresting and detaining them. And, you know, a young man was maced while being told to back up. I don't know. I think both parties are, I think the issue is that the St. Paul police is just, they're kind of done with us.
I have a question for you about the closing of the streets, because one of the issues that the police had with protesters with that was them blocking the streets, not just at this protest, but others, that this has been a major point of contention, protesters are blocking the streets, right? But then you also told me that the police blocked off the street. Can you explain all of that progression back and forth, because it's kind of confusing that
so on Sunday, for instance, when we had the event, the community event, we had lots of people show up for it, and the police blocked the streets off on their own. Okay. Like we didn't take to the streets and just get it shut down. As people showed up, and since we were already there and the police were already situated, They just put up the police blockades and shut the street down.
Mm-hmm.
At one point, there were officers that came in and were taking part in the event and were talking to people, and they were there. And so it's like, they make it sound as if we consistently shut down the street, but what happens is, like, we'll stay on the boulevard and we'll stay on the sidewalk, and then the police will put up a blockade, and then we just take advantage of it. So if they do, so then, you know, people will go and, you know, people play frisbee in the street. People do chalk art. They sit and they converse. They talk. So it is a back and forth. But yet, all we keep hearing over and over is this rhetoric that, like, we are closing the streets, that the protesters are doing it, and we're not always doing it. Like, the police close the street down, and then we're like, all right, well, we're going to take advantage of it. If you have it shut down, we'll do it.
Okay. Well, let me ask you another question about the street closing issue, because it has been in the media for the last couple of weeks. In fact, here locally in the Fargo-Moorhead region, there have even been local radio personalities that have called for protesters to be run down. And this rhetoric, I mean, it has to frighten you as a protester being out there on the streets. Can you explain to listeners, why do protesters take to the streets? How do you feel about the whole issue? And what would you say to people out there who are advocating for protesters to be run down?
Well, I think one, to speak on that, to condone any sort of physical violence is absolutely abhorrent. I mean, at no point do we want to incite violence or rage, and we are not violent. And so for people to look at us and say, like, we're just going to run you down and you deserve to be run over because we're blocking a street, I think they kind of speak volumes to almost their ignorance and their idea that they don't understand how difficult it is just to be black or brown in America and how inconvenient our lives are every single day. You know, at the end of the day, like, we don't get to wash off our skin. We don't get to wash away our color. We have to walk through life every day inconvenienced. And so when we take to the streets, and there is a historical context to it, you know, if you look at the way the interstates were built, the highways were built, they cut through poor neighborhoods, minority neighborhoods. They broke up, you know, the Rondo neighborhood when 94 was built. You know, they destroyed homes, they destroyed businesses, and they were never able to recover. And then you look at, you know, and then you look at the civil rights movement. Public transportation has always been a big part of, you know, minorities' lives. And when we shut those things down, we're making an impact on an oppressive system that continues to oppress us. And then we're also saying to people, hey, look, this is an inconvenience, but guess what? My life is inconvenienced every single day.
Now, I don't know if you've been following what's been going on in Mexico in terms of protesters there. But,
yes, a little bit.
Oh, good. But I wanted to draw your attention to this because on my program, which is where we're doing this interview, which is a Mexican Crossing Lines, I talked about how the government and the state and federal police had decided in Oaxaca that the blockage of the roadway required federal police and state police to come in and forcibly remove peaceful protesters, and this resulted in, you know, airstrikes on the protesters from the sky with gas canisters. There were a lot of people that were killed and arrested. Do you see any parallels to what's happening in the way that the state and the federal government respond to protests in this country? And if so, what are your comments about that?
I mean, I think the parallels are just that it's kind of an overreach. You know, it's very militarized at this point, and, you know, there's not a lot of communication, and so everything is just so quick to escalate violence and incite violence. I would say that, you know, our police systems are, I'm certain in areas they are just as violent as the state and federal police in Mexico, but I think the major issue is that there's overreach, and then there's oversight, and then there's no transparency. And so that's really what we're asking for, is like, we want to communicate with the police. We want to fix the criminal justice system. We want to make it fair, equal, and equitable for everyone. But yet no one will really communicate with us. So it's like, you know, how do we bring that common ground? And so I think there are definitely parallels to it. But I think also we have to be mindful of what it's like, and, you know, what the world is like in Mexico as compared to what it is here. Mm-hmm. And I think there's probably a lot more brutality in Mexico than there is possibly here in the United States.
Now, what are the next steps for the people that are protesting on behalf of Philando Castile? How do you think that this last round of arrests will impact the protest movement on his behalf? And what are your feelings about staying connected to the protests?
Well, my hope is that it doesn't deter protesters in any way. You know, I mean, there are people that are going to continuously come back. You know, and we're going to keep fighting for justice, not just for Philando, but, you know, for anyone that's experiencing, you know, police brutality, for anyone that's been disenfranchised or marginalized by the system. You know, that is really what we're fighting for, and I think it's important that we continue to do it. So moving forward, I don't know what the next step will be. I don't know what's going to go on, but I know that I will continue to be as heavily involved in the movement as I possibly can be.
Well, thank you very much, Janessa. Is there anything else that you think is really important for the listeners here in the Fargo-Moorhead region to know so that they can connect to the movement, support the work that you're doing out there in the Twin Cities, or any information that you want them to know about how to contact you or any others?
You know, I think one of the biggest things that I just really, you know, that I talk a lot about is that, again, you know, if you know people who are involved with Black Lives Matter or who are involved in any sort of protest movement like this, you know, to know that we are not anti-police, we are not pro-violence, and, you know, we are trying to do something peacefully. And, you know, it's like a forceful peace movement, you know, like we really want to get our message out to people to know that, you know, these injustices still occur, and to try to take time to even just educate yourself, and not just with the memes and the things that you see on Facebook or the Facebook, you know, news things that show up. You know, go outside of Facebook and really look up real news things. You know, even just go to the Black Lives Matter page. Go to these pages that are verified, these news sources that are verified, and really look into it and move beyond your comfort zone when it comes to what the media is telling you. Because we see and we feel racism every day and oppression every day as Black and brown folks. And all we're asking for is for understanding and to be, you know, we have the same rights, but we are not offered those same rights because there isn't real equality and there isn't real equity in those rights. And we just want people to understand that. And we are doing it peacefully, and we are doing it with words. And, you know, and we're trying to fight back against this as peacefully as we can. And, you know, we're good people. We're hardworking people. And, you know, and we're just trying to make the world right.
Thank you very much, Janessa. I really appreciate you giving us the perspective, the information about what's going on with the protests for Philando Castile in the Twin Cities, especially since all we get to see is what is on social media. So you giving us all of these more intimate details and sharing your perspective really helps people in the community to understand what this work and this movement is about. So I really appreciate that you sharing that with us here at KPPPLP. Stay with us for just a moment.
No problem.
Thank you.
Sure.
on social media, and that has kind of kept people up to date.
Yep.
Our local news media on number of arrests and kind of how everything's going. I really don't have much of an update beyond that. Today's been pretty relatively quiet.
I wanted to verify some things. Saw the governor's residence update said that St. Paul officers arrested 23 people for public nuisance and unlawful assembly near the intersection of Summit Avenue and Oxford Street, and that those that were arrested were standing and sitting in the middle of the street, that they refused to leave the area, and even after several dispersal orders, and that in total there was about 70 protesters that were arrested yesterday and this morning for disorderly conduct, unlawful assembly, and public nuisance.
Sure, that sounds pretty accurate. It sounds like a kind of a mishmash of everything that went on yesterday, yes.
Okay, so it was about 70 protesters in total. Is that a correct, fair number?
Yes, I think it's in that 70 range. There's some juveniles in there, too, so sometimes those numbers, as far as reconciling how many exact were done,
sure.
I think we posted it on our Facebook page. I think we're in that 69 range, possibly 70. But we were using 70 as an approximate this week to kind of have a little bit of a catch-all.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're trying to get a feel for what's happening all the way in the Twin Cities. And all we really see are Facebook updates and, social media commentary.
Yep.
And it's very hard to get a feel for what's been going on because the progression has been... What we've seen so far from the mayor and from the police chief was that peaceful assembly would be allowed, that the police chief said that they didn't want to make any arrests as long as people followed the rules and weren't disruptive, that they would be allowed to protest. Can you give me any idea of what escalated situations out on that up
sure.
Summit Avenue?
When you talk about, there's a lot of things talking about right of way, and there's certain city ordinances and state statutes that govern, where people can be on the public space as far as blocking sidewalks, erecting tents, things of that nature. I don't want to get into all the things that would go up on the sidewalk that would block the passage on the sidewalk, but you can imagine all the myriad of things they put out there. But when you get in the street, blocking the street is a safety hazard for not only the people that are out there protesting and expressing their First Amendment rights, but it's also a danger to the people that are driving through that area. So the thing that brings it up is when they are occupying the street and blocking that the sidewalk area. That's what precipitated us going out there yesterday and talking to them and getting them to move that stuff. And then we asked them to stay... to not block the street, and that some people continue to do so, and then arrests began to happen.
If I could ask you real quick, what has it been like for the St. Paul Police Department dealing with the protests since the killing of Philando Castile, and how have you been managing, especially with the street blockages of this nature?
What's street blockages?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. We fully expect as a capital city, the Philando Castile incident did not occur in our city. I don't know if you know about the St. Paul, but it did not occur in St. Paul. But being the capital city and kind of the hub of political, as the capital being the hub of political activity within the state, we expect to have more than our share of political protests, due to the fact that we have these... political processes that occur in St. Paul. So, keeping that in mind, we're supportive of people to come in and express their First Amendment rights, and happy to be there to make sure everybody's safe, the public and the protesters. But as far as your question,
How are you managing the protesting, and do you have the resources and the police necessary to handle these situations?
Very prepared to handle these situations. And we're willing to work with people, too, so that they can get out there and express themselves.
Now, I heard from some of the protesters out there that they held an event that where the street was blocked off by the police, and the police even participated in the event. Or they were, with the community members, talking to them and participating in the event that they held. Is that correct?
Okay, I don't understand. I have no idea what you're talking about or what event that was. Or there's been so much stuff. We've been out there for 20 days.
Sure.
There's so many different things that have happened. I don't know which one you're really referencing.
Has there been times when the police department themselves have blocked off the streets?
Have blocked off the streets?
Yes.
You know, there's been different marches. We'll go back to the state fair last year during the marches that occurred during the state fair on Snelling.
Sure.
The police department, you know, is willing to, you know, accommodate. You know, if people want to peacefully protest and say march,
mm-hmm.
we have escorted these marches before. They're non-permitted marches, but we still recognize their First Amendment right to protest and facilitate the safe passage of that march in our city. And we did that there. We've done it in a few different places, even around the Twin City Marathon. It wasn't until this past incident that the march, which was going on when it went down onto the freeway, that it turned where they blocked the freeway and became different than past marches.
Sure. Also, I noticed that people posted a signage that was recently put up indicating that people couldn't put, you know, there was certain rules that were listed on the signs, including trash and things that couldn't be obstructing the roadway. Can you talk about what prompted the city to do that? What was the need there?
Well, I think it's a little bit of an education piece. We've been handing out pamphlets on the different rules and how those rules apply, city ordinances and state statutes. So it's kind of an education piece. We've been handing out brochures on protest and how protest can be done in accordance with those rules and how, you know, to just basically stay within those rules. So it's a little bit of an educational piece. We hand out the brochures and they actually posted the signage out there to maybe catch the people that weren't exposed to the brochure.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for the interview.
Well, thank you. Have a good day.
You too. Appreciate it. Bye.
and welcome back to A Mexican Crossing Lines. This is Cindy Gomez-Shump.
And this is Duke Gomez-Shump.
And today we are talking about the unrest, the political unrest that is going on from St. Paul to the DNC in Philly. There was a lot of protesting. As you heard right before the break, there were protests going on because of the unrest in the Twin Cities over the killing of Philando Castile. Protesters there are still looking for justice. They not just for Philando Castile. Jamar Clark was killed in the Twin Cities. We saw a lot of protest happen after that. And unlike most of the other times that there has been a police killing, the Minnesota killing, the killing in Falcon Heights of Philando Castile, mm-hmm. really came on the heels of the killing of Alton Sterling in Baton Rouge, Louisiana.
That's right. That's right.
And there were massive protests at that time. The differences, which we talked about here on this program, mm-hmm. was the immediacy of the way that people were able to see those videos. Philando Castile's girlfriend broadcasting hers on Facebook Live.
Yeah.
And the impact that that had with communities where they felt like they were there in the moment.
That's right. It's unfiltered by a news agency having commentary or cutting things out. It was just live life.
Exactly. And, you know, that's why I wanted to interview people that were there on the ground, because this today when I woke up and looked at social media, so many of our independent media partners and people at protests, both in Philly and in St. Paul, were saying that they either had just been arrested or had just been released from jail, or that their friends had been arrested and brutalized. And it was all over my feed. So I thought, we need to talk about this today. We need to hear from the folks that were there, what they were experiencing, and why this occurred. Why is this occurring right now?
Yeah.
Mark Dayton made some very strong statements after Philando Castile was killed.
Mm-hmm, immediately.
About race,
mm-hmm.
about police brutality.
Exactly.
He said that Philando Castile would still be alive if he was white.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, those are pretty strong statements.
Very, very strong.
I think that calling of action from the community has remained pretty steady for the past 20 days, according mm-hmm. to Officer Mike, who spoke there in the interview about all of the work they've been doing. He's like, I tried to ask him about a specific event that was mentioned by Janessa, and he was like, you know, we've just been steadily doing this work for 20 days.
Yeah, he's been, you know, when you hear the interview of the protester, you know, it's a lot more real what's going on. The police officer is, you know, playing it cool, talking about handing out flyers and trying to tell people how to exercise their constitutional rights. But we've seen all over the country that the police don't care about the constitutional rights of people that are have the right of assembly. So for 70 people to get arrested, there was stuff going on that was chaotic.
Well, I saw some of the videos. We couldn't share the audio from those videos because there was a lot of cussing in them.
Yeah, that's too bad.
So it would have, you would have just heard lots of beeps,
beep, 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 beep.
So we decided, you know, it's better to have somebody talk about what they saw.
Definitely.
And what Janessa stated was what I saw in the videos with the police running at protesters mm-hmm. and arresting people that were not running or screaming or throwing things. They were literally just standing around.
There, yes.
Yeah. But the police came running at them. It was kind of scary. And, you know, I'm trying to get a sense, which is why we did the interviews, from both sides, what is the concerns? There was a lot of lead up, which is why I asked the officer, how did this occur? There's a lot of lead up in the media of the mayor and the police chief saying they didn't want to arrest anyone. Everyone has the right to peaceably assemble. But, you know, at the end of the day, when you have folks being arrested, including in one of the social media posts I saw, an entire family mm-hmm. that were arrested and they took the little kid away.
Wow.
The police took the little kid away, too.
Yeah.
I don't know if they arrested him or what, you know, what do they do with little children? Yeah, but
take them to separate from their families, punish them even more.
That has to be terrifying for folks that are feeling that they have the right to be there and mm-hmm. to protest this death.
And they do. They do have a right to be there. This is a governor's mansion, you mm-hmm. know, and it's public space. It's owned by us as you know, community members of Minnesota.
Mm-hmm. And there's been a lot of talk about anger over protesters taking up public space, public highways, protesting on roadways that really anger people and seem to justify even the police say that they need to have safety, which means that the roadways need to be clear.
Yeah.
But is that a an imminent threat to society? Are they committing crime that is taking someone's life or threatening someone's well-being or life?
No. And it's also those protests have happened in areas where these highways have cut through communities of colors, communities, separated them, kept them from having transportation, kept them from having access to stores, cut them right in half. They weren't concerned about the people that lived there when they ran those highways through. So when they protest on these highways, they pick them because of their historical significance. And people have forgotten that, obviously.
Mm-hmm. And Janessa did talk about that. I really appreciated the way that she broke it all down for us. And I also appreciate the information that we got from the St. Paul Police. I think that anybody that's out there protesting needs to know what their rights are, needs to know what the expectations are from the police departments, because folks got to be safe and you got to be prepared.
That's right.
That's definitely what this Mexican Crossing Lines would like to see. And I want to pivot quickly over to the RNC. The DNC.
DNC, yes.
The RNC is still lingering in my head.
Uh-huh.
I've been traumatized. and what the incredible walkout. That was very unexpected. I don't think that the campaign, the DNC, expected this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And I think they were not prepared in Philly for massive protests of that magnitude.
Yeah.
From people inside of the convention center.
Inside. Very, very, very important difference. All the conventions, there's been demonstrations outside. But people, maybe a stray gets in, you know, but gets arrested right away. But to have actual delegates who paid and registered to be there,
massive
to exercise
amounts.
Their mm-hmm. rights at the convention, that is unheard of.
I know. It's historic. And that's why it's incredible that it occurred. And the backlash after it. I mean, we've seen so many different conversations about Never Hillary and the Bernie Bros and all of the divide in the Democratic Party. And as I looked out at political figures, leaders in organizations, in movements, in the Black Lives Matter movement, in media justice work, in organizing, our friends in media, in independent media, and in corporate media too, in mainstream media, and I'm seeing that it is such a difficult topic to talk about. I mean, many of our closest friends are having a hard time even discussing their views on Hillary and on this campaign.
Well, I think people have been asleep for a long time. We've been talking about it on your show for 9 months or so. And as we talk and we research and we look, we develop expectations and we're not surprised. So I think people have kind of been asleep. And they're sitting back, and now the reality and the shock is hitting them. The sticker shock is hitting them now that look at where we are.
But the group I just mentioned, the list I just went through, is all people that have been talking about it and that have been watching, and they don't feel comfortable talking about this.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
They don't want to endorse anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Many people are coming out and saying they're not going to endorse anyone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, of course, there's the people like Sarah Silverman, who was a very strong Bernie supporter and is now upset with the people in her own campaign, in her own movement, because, you know, I think she feels like many people do that people that are in the Bernie camp who are either going to sit this one out or do a write-in or vote third party or Green Party or whatever, are really throwing their vote away.
Oh, definitely.
And it's probably helping Trump win.
Oh, it's going to definitely bolster Trump, you know, and I've heard a few writers talk about this, and it's like, okay, the bigger prize is actually not have Trump elected. The goal is to get Trump not to be the president of the United States.
And the Bernie supporters are, and you know, people that are rightfully angry at the past Clinton administrations and for various reasons, the past two Obama administrations, they don't want more of the same. And they said, I shouldn't be bullied into voting for Hillary just because I don't want Trump.
Yeah.
And while that is a valid feeling. It's a valid feeling to have that you shouldn't have to vote for the lesser of two evils.
Exactly.
Go back and listen to the last show that I did about my my views of the differences between the RNC and the DNC.
Yeah, exactly.
Because it's very privileged. It's a very privileged view to be able to just throw away your vote. That's not something that is a Mexican crossing lines I've ever been able to do.
No.
Because my well-being and the well-being of my closest friends and family are going to be in the balance in a Trump administration. And I know that a fascist president is probably going to kill a lot more people than your run-of-the-mill Democrat.
Exactly.
Which we've already had. We already had a Hillary presidency. I mean, we've already had a Clinton
Obama,
presidency.
Clinton,
and she's been part of, she was a very strong part of that administration. She wasn't making cookies, as she said.
That's right.
She was actively involved, as well as being Secretary of State in the Obama administrations, both. So she's been involved in this whole time. She's been deeply involved in the politics of this country. And we already know what that's like. And look, we still voted twice for Obama. And we still continued to applaud many of his policies. It's not, I don't know, it's not the Armageddon that I feel that the Bernie camp is making it out to seem. The idea of voting for Hillary is this, you know, end all be all. I think it's much more rooted in our sexism in this country.
Definitely.
And in our white supremacy, our male white supremacy.
Exactly.
Because of, you know, I talked about this yesterday, because of white feminism and its desire to protect male white supremacy, white women have continued to allow the stereotype to stigmatize black and brown women as being passionate and hysterical and loud and rude and dangerous. And women should be able to express themselves brashly and boldly and and be confident and say what, and be in positions of power and say what we think needs to happen without being labeled as hysterical, without being labeled as shrill, without being seen as some form of tyrant or some, you know, a weak person because of our sex.
Yes.
Because of our gender. That shouldn't still be happening in America 2016, but unfortunately, here it is. There we have it. And I think that it would be silly of us not to look at this and learn from this as a country, in the same way that we had to look at the ugliness of how Obama's administration brought out the racism in America. We need to look at the nomination of Hillary Clinton and possible presidency of Hillary Clinton as a lesson of why we need to look at and eradicate sexism in this country.
Definitely.
White women included. White women first.
Yeah.
You know, first and foremost. But there was a lot of other things about the DNC that that brought up a lot of political unrest, not the least of which was the fact that Black Lives Matter finally showed up. There was a an eruption, and I don't think that it was, you know, staged. I don't think that it was planned.
It was organic, definitely.
It was organic, and I think it was very uncomfortable and unwanted because, well, we have a clip of it, so you can hear this spontaneous eruption of Black Lives Matter as the mothers of the movement took the stage, and these were mothers of people that lost their lives to violence, gun violence, including police brutality, as well as other forms of gun violence like drive-by shootings. Here on the stage, all these Black women came together. They were all over Twitter as Mothers of the Movement, hashtag Mothers of the Movement, and along with Black Lives Matter. Why don't you play that clip for us, Duke?
Tonight, Give me 2 moments to tell you how good God is. Whew. Hallelujah.
You could tell there was a certain amount of discomfort, and that was Sandra Bland's mother that was speaking first.
Wow.
If you didn't hear the speech by the Mothers of the Movement, I recommend that you go and listen to the full thing. I can't play it all here because that would just take up the rest of our show, and we're able to talk about this.
Mm-hmm.
But it was an incredible moment, and it really outraged everybody over at Fox News.
Okay. Yes.
The former playground of Roger Ailes.
Yes. Yes.
The former kingdom of Prince Pinocchio.
Yeah.
The fallen prince, and his harem of sexually harassed women.
Yeah. Exactly.
They were really angry. Also the police association, the union, the police all over America were brought on to the Faux News Network and went on television and talked about in many different places how they felt that this was a slap in the face to law enforcement.
Yeah, that they deserve to be up there too, you know, and it's like, you know, this whole thing of the Black Lives Matter automatically elicits a response that these other lives matter, and it's like, that's not what it's saying. It's Black Lives Matter. We need to focus on that and acknowledge that. And it's simple. And with the mothers of the movement on stage, they were the mothers of the movement. Let them speak. Let their speeches stand. Let what they said stand. We don't need to dilute it with a whole bunch of other perspectives.
Well, you know, that's one. That is definitely one view. And there's a lot of people that feel that way. I'm sure that the DNC was trying to sell this as a gun control issue
rather
than a Black Lives Matter, which is why when the people erupted in Black Lives Matter chants, they were like, shh, shh, be quiet.
It's about guns. Say no guns.
We don't want to be divisive.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
So which is exactly why, in addition to the many mothers of people, black men, black people that were slain by police officers, guns.
Yeah.
There was also a mother of a child that was slain by a drive-by.
Okay.
Just a different form of gun violence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in the context of that, I don't see why there couldn't be police officers' families up there that were also slain by gun violence, especially and particularly because the majority of police that are killed by other police.
Yes, exactly.
And that is another form of gun violence that needs to be talked about more.
Well, you know, the clip of the Mothers of the Movement is only 9 minutes long. I think they only had 10 minutes to do that whole piece.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could have done a whole section, a good, you know, hour on, if they wanted to focus on guns, do the whole thing on guns and interject all these different facets of what that means.
But I think that it was really good that Black Lives Matter, however clandestinely, made its appearance at the DNC.
That's true.
It was important to the movement. If they really want to sow unity in the movement, that was a good first step, even though it was a clumsy, accidental one.
Mm-hmm. Buried in the middle.
But, you know, what was crazy was the whole convention hall erupted into the chant.
Yeah.
And it was incredible, especially for me as a woman of color, to finally hear a room of people embrace Black Lives Matter. Because, you know, at the RNC, they went and they asked people and they said, you know, this violence that we've been seeing against black people, that's terrible, right? I mean, of course, all lives matter, but of course, the reason we're saying this is because Black Lives Matter too,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
You can say that Black Lives Matter, right?
Oh, yeah.
And no one could say that. They would respond, all lives matter.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they would say, yeah, but Black Lives Matter too, right? Can you say that Black Lives do matter? Can you say that Black Lives matter?
Black Lives Matter,
and they'd
for
say,
sure.
All lives matter.
Yeah.
And they couldn't say it.
Yeah.
And they do. Black lives matter.
Definitely.
And so to hear that, to hear this whole room chanting Black Lives Matter, that was a beautiful moment.
Mm-hmm.
That was a beautiful moment, that historic moment at the DNC. And it would never have happened at the RNC.
No.
And you know what's even more telling? They didn't do a chant of All Lives Matter because they really don't care about all lives.
Yeah, exactly.
At the RNC.
Mm-hmm.
other things that happened that I thought were very interesting was the speech of Michelle Obama.
Oh, yeah.
And Michelle, of course, a great orator. People were joking that she had speeches at both the RNC and the DNC because Melania plagiarized
their speech.
Mm-hmm. Plagiarized most of her speech. Yeah. So Michelle Obama actually spoke at both speeches. Mm-hmm. She was represented everywhere. Our amazing First Lady, Michelle Obama, gave a great speech. But what was most criticized about the second night of the DNC, among the other things we've talked about, among the Bernie walkout, among the criticisms of the black movement, the black people talking about only black people and black lives up there rather than talking about police lives too.
Yeah.
Was Michelle Obama saying that every day she wakes up in a house built by slaves.
Yeah, exactly.
And there was a lot of news commentators, including Bill O'Reilly, who said that slaves were treated real good.
Oh, yes.
When they were the slaves building the White House, they ate fine and they were treated well.
They had crumpets and tea and everything was fine. Oh, right. Those slaves were treated well. Boy, that really diminishes what slavery is.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And also, I don't know if I mentioned this, but I have to tell you, during the Bernie walkout, going backwards a little bit, Fox News sent Geraldo Rivera out to confront people in the walkout, I guess, and talk to them. And they just started booing him. I think that they dumped water on his head.
Oh, my God.
He was out there defending Roger Ailes. You know, this guy is one of the diehard Fox people.
Oh, wow.
So I just thought it was incredible that he went out there. We saw some of this when people were protesting the death of Michael Brown, when they sent Don Lemon out and they people were like, get out of here, get away.
Mm-hmm.
But it was incredible that the Fox News, they've fallen so far.
Yes, yes, they
like,
have.
They can show up at an event like this and people will dump water on their reporters' heads. Like something is happening.
Definitely.
Not just, you know, something is happening in terms of this mainstream media outlet, especially as it is viewed as more propaganda than it is news now.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that was really crazy about the whole, Michelle Obama's speech and the mention of slaves was the way in which many people reacted by saying that, you know, they would just like to hear a speech about the history of this country where people don't bring up slavery anymore.
Oh,
can we
really?
Just do that? Can we just have that?
We can't have any black people talking about their history. We can't have that.
And, you know, this is what I've said. I said it again. I said it before. I'll say it again. You may disagree with me. And by the way, if you want to leave us your comments, questions about this show or any other, you can contact us at 701-566-0917, 701-566-0917. Leave us your name and place where you live, and we might use your comments on the air. And or you can tweet us at media_PPP or email me or Duke at Cindy or Duke at kpppfm.com. We certainly want to hear what you guys have to say, but I will just leave you with this thought. If you're going to try to unite a base for the Democratic Party, you have to mention immigrants. You have to mention undocumented Mexican immigrants. You have to talk about changing that broken immigration system. You have to talk about Black Lives Matter, and you cannot forget rape culture in America and sexism. That is what is really bringing down this whole political campaign for Hillary. I'm going to keep talking about it on this program, A Mexican Crossing Lines. Thank you for listening.
Did you hear the cry? Did you hear the cry? Did you hear the cry? Hear the cry? Did you hear the cry? Did you hear the cry? Hear the cry? I can't breathe. I can hear my brother crying. Cry.